want to plan anything ahead. He doesn't want Hamas to be there. He doesn't want the PA to be there. He doesn't want any kind of Palestinian authority in Gaza. And with that understanding, many people understand that Netanyahu will just want to stay in this status of war, maybe forever. Then he doesn't have to bring the hostages. To release the hostages, he has to pay a political price to release Palestinian prisoners. This can endanger his coalition with Ben-Gvir and Smotrich and other extreme right-wing figures who oppose any release of Palestinian political prisoners. So with time, you do hear, so people are calling for ceasefire and for a deal, but from an internal Israeli perspective of releasing the hostages and thinking about the day after, and less from the perspective we're seeing abroad of just calling to end the massacre in Gaza.
And finally, we just have about 30 seconds. We last talked to you where that thousands of Israelis gathering with Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, calling for Jewish settlements in Gaza, etc. Do you see a growing group of people opposing that in Israel?
Yes, definitely. The group that was calling to settle in Gaza, among with the activists who are blocking the aid, are confronted by the Israeli mainstream public that thinks that this is irrelevant and cannot be done. And also,
Orenzi, we're going to have to leave it there. But I thank you so much for being with us, reporter and photographer for 972 Magazine. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO just finished our annual All Thrills, No Frills special programming campaign. We want to thank all of our supporters for helping us bring the community engaging, unique, and all-around fun special episodes and killer marathons. We wouldn't be able to do it without you, our listeners. And if you missed out on any of our programming, you can check out the list of specials at kboo.fm/thrills.
This is KBOO Community Radio. I'm Eric Leuschner. In this next hour, we'll be presenting you with excerpts from a Portland City Council District 2 candidate forum. It was held on March 6th at St. John's Church in Portland, Oregon. 12 of the candidates running for the 3 open seats in District 2 participated. The District 2 candidate forum was moderated by Seamus Linsky. In the next hour, we'll hear from candidates Jonathan Tessini, Christopher Olson, Mariah Hudson, Ruben Berlin, Brooklyn Sherman, Mark Coller, James Armstrong, Debbie Kitchen, Ilana Pertelgini, Jennifer Park, Laura Stribe, and John Middleton. One candidate and current city commissioner, Dan Ryan, was unable to attend. In the interest of time and maintaining focus on the questions posed, the candidates' answers have been edited for clarity and brevity. The full, unedited recording of the forum is available on our website at kboo.fm. Let's get into the forum. This is moderator Seamus Linsky.
It's city policy that the police bureau's North Precinct should have about 120 officers. Currently, North Precinct has about 89 officers. And for context, the other precincts have around 100 police officers. Do you favor increasing North Precinct staffing? If yes, where would you get the funding to do that? And if not, how would you address the public safety issues facing residents here in North Portland?
This is John Middleton.
Do I support increasing the Portland Police Bureau staffing? Here it goes, folks, absolutely not. I am diametrically opposed to continuing to doing the same thing we've been doing for 250 years. Criminalizing and penalizing people has led us to where we are now. We all know where we are. We see where we are. We voted for real change, which is why I'm up here, why the rest of these candidates are up here. As far as public safety, I absolutely have an idea of how I would like to see public safety addressed. In my perfect wave a wand world, it would happen overnight, but we'd need a nice transition. And I would like you to envision everything we have now, but restructured. I don't like Portland Street Response name because it's been tainted and everyone talks bad about it. We'll come up with a new name. We've got some pretty good advertising businesses here in this local area. We can figure that out. But Portland Street Response 2.0, and they need to lead the way. And when I say that, instead of our police being ahead of everything and then Portland Street Response underneath the fire department and everything else, Portland Street Response, or our entity that is that, needs to be leading the way. And then everything else will work down through that. You'd call 911, you'd get an operator, they'd ask you what kind of emergency you needed, and they would literally send out the appropriate person.
That was John Middleton. Now, this is Laura Stribe.
As far as policing goes, I would like to see change. There has been federal requirements that the police have been trying to work through or ignoring since 2003, 2004. And we really need to follow those federal guidelines that have been handed down to make sure that we are not racially profiling, that we're not continually marginalizing people. We need to have community engagement in the process of our police. A lot of the issues that we're seeing are mental health issues on the streets that definitely need a more softer hand to connect and work with these people and help our neighbors get the services they need. If we have police, I would like for them to be more community-based police, people that are walking neighborhoods and that broken windows model versus the driving around or just flying down Lombard to arrest one person when we're calling for an emergency and they don't show up. So that's how I would envision it. We have not defunded the police here in Portland. We have quite a large budget for Portland police. And so I would like to see how those resources are being used and how we can better and more efficiently use the resources that we have, because we do have a very large budget within the city of Portland. And I feel like we just need to take a look at where those dollars are going and making sure that we can be efficient in that.
That was Laura Stribe. Now, this is Jennifer Park.
On the front of that, we need to restructure our public safety. And one of the beautiful things about this whole restructuring of city government is right now we have Portland Fire and Rescue and Portland Police Bureau being overseen by different people. We have these really siloed models of safety where they're not actually cooperating. So Portland Street Response is underneath the purview of Portland Fire and Rescue. Fire and Rescue is an $11 million shortfall. Portland Street Response doesn't even operate 24/7, is getting cut $3 million, and that's because of the way that those budgets are siloed. Portland Police Bureau isn't fronting any of that money for Portland Street Response. As we break down the way we've siloed how we run the city, as we approach this whole new form of city government, let's look at public safety and say, what are the things that we are responding to? Who needs to respond to them? And I have a feeling we're going to find that no, we actually don't need to increase our police count. But we do need to improve our police oversight. I think part of our challenge is that nobody wants to work in a broken institution, and that's really what we have with our Portland police right now. We have several different organizations, committees that are overseeing community engagement of policing. There was just a proposal announced yesterday for the ballot where they're going to even cut the power that they have to investigate police incidents. So we really need to rethink how we're doing public safety. It needs to be overseen completely and really administered and have everyone involved come to the table and be funded and be responding to the things that actually make sense for their expertise.
That was Jennifer Park. Now this is Ilana Pertelgini.
So many people I talk to feel like they don't get police response. And at the same time, we don't necessarily want to see more police on our streets. I think that most Portlanders would agree that we want to see the right type of public safety response. And I use public safety broadly. I'll talk about that in a moment. That we want to see that response be timely, which is a huge issue in our city right now. and that we want to make sure that response doesn't criminalize people because of their race or income level. And I think if we start from those principles, and then we talk about our public safety system broadly with three parts, we have the police who respond to criminal concerns. We have our fire department that responds to fires, yes, and also medical calls. And then we have our community responses, Portland Street Response, CHAT, there are a number of other programs that have been piloted that are our crisis response. When somebody is in crisis and needs help in a way that isn't medical necessarily or fire related and that isn't criminal in nature. And if we look broadly at how do we create a public safety system where we get the right response in a timely fashion, in a way that doesn't criminalize poverty, that doesn't criminalize anybody who isn't white, then I think we can talk about what the right level of police staffing is. And I don't know if it would be 120. It might be far fewer than that. It might be just a little bit fewer than that, but I don't think we can have the conversation about what we need until we have that three-tiered response in a timely fashion where people in our district know that help will be there in the right way for anybody who needs it.
That was Ilana Pertl-Ginney. Now this is Debbie Kitchen.
I really do look at public safety in a broad view, and it includes policing for criminal activities, and it also includes protection against hate crimes. It includes safety on our streets for pedestrians, bicyclists, and people driving. Some of that includes policing for unsafe driving, but some of it is also training and education for people. So I take a very broad view of public safety. I think that we have had fewer police officers than we had in our budgets because of training requirements. I understand we have 140 officers citywide that are projected to retire this year. So there are always vacancies, and sometimes lately we've been having trouble filling those vacancies. I don't think that our budgets are too low for policing. I think it is by focusing more on the full broad sense of public safety, having a Portland Street Response that is viable, having all of our public safety efforts coordinated and managed by professional city management rather than siloed in the bureaus under individual commissioners. I just think that process has led to a lot of inefficiencies, uncoordinated activity, and we're wasting money. I think that it's not a matter of spending more money, but spending it more wisely.
That was Debbie Kitchen. Now this is James Armstrong.
I have a unique experience with the police in that mostly I see them around 2 a.m. at one of my businesses because someone's broken in. That's happened a couple dozen times in the last few years. That does not mean I'm up here saying, oh my gosh, we need more police. The frustrations we have as business owners is that all the police are doing is responding long after something's happened. I've had a lot of conversations with various people in the police department, various people that are working on these issues about preventing crime. And here in St. John's, we have a St. John's Safety and Livability Committee with the boosters where we're actively trying to do things to increase safety in our neighborhood. One thing I did personally to try and understand this issue better, because I think it's something we're gonna all be talking a lot, is I went on a police ride along. I went on a police ride along in East Precinct in the middle of the night, and it was not boring. There was a lot going on. But what I also learned is they're very short-staffed, and there are no other resources available in the middle of the night. There's no Portland Street Response. There's no Project Respond. There's just police officers. And that's a problem, because we went to a lot of calls that didn't need a gun. And we were helping people, and these police officers I worked with, they were very professional. But they didn't need to be there. And when we're talking about budget, we're talking about resources, there's a lot of opportunities for trained professionals that want to help their community to be involved with the Portland Police. Chief Day has been asked this question and he agrees with it. And I kind of agree too. I think Portland Street Response should be under the Portland Police Bureau. I think they should welcome it. I think they should bring it in. I think they should fully fund it. And they should listen to Portlanders that say, we want next to police officers, we want someone who's unarmed, that's there to help the community that's in crisis.
That was James Armstrong. Now, this is Mark Kohler.
All of us have experienced the results of policing that isn't effective. A lot of it has to do with how we hire and how we train. We really need to reinvent the police department here. My son's motorcycle was stolen twice, two different times. Both times we had it on video. The police basically said, file an insurance claim. And I think as a small business owner, I've heard it from others, that's what you do. Half of the police responses have been for drug overdoses. And as people have said, there are other alternatives than sending a policeman when someone has a drug overdose. What we're doing on Hayden Island, which is very interesting, is that we have a neighborhood association there that has gotten very active. And I think that's really the key to security and safety, is getting all of us more involved in our own neighborhoods. We have a system called, it's an interesting acronym, it's CSI, it's Community Security something or another, but it's actually, we tie into the cameras that exist in our association neighborhoods and the retailers and through a relationship, but it allows us to be interacting with events before they happen to help prevent those kinds of things. On Hayden Island, we've lost our restaurants, our supermarket, our bank. We have nothing left there because of the retail crime situation. I think a lot of that has to do with how we staff. The kind of responses that we need to do has to do with dealing with people who are going through crisis, whether it's a mental problem, which is so much of the calls for people who are in crisis. The police aren't going to solve our problems. I think we know that. The police also belong to the mayor, not to us. So we don't have that kind of authority to change it. As a group, we have to agree, and I think a lot of us are agreeing with what needs to be done. And I think as a council, we will be able to provide the kind of guidance through the city council to the mayor to do what we need to do.
That was Mark Kohler. Now, this is Brooklyn Sherman.
If we don't get more eyes on the street, people are getting forced to go to private options like security. And we need to understand that we don't get more police officers at this time on the street to be visible, to walk around and just patrol. And obviously, we need to fund other bureaus, because again, it's about getting more eyes on the street. Because if we don't provide, as a city, eyes on the street, people will go to private alternatives. And we need to stop privatizing law enforcement.
That was Brooklyn Sherman. Now, this is Ruben Berlin.
Portland Street Response is probably one of the best things we can do. And if we can fund that into a 24-hour program and take a lot of burden off our police, so they're not just being reactionary, they're not just responding to emergencies that they don't need to be there, I would hope that the police could be more investigative in nature and work on ongoing crime or individuals that are perpetrating a lot of these break-ins and ongoing events that really bother our local businesses and homeowners. I would like to talk to the Portland Police. I've been able to talk to other districts, Happy Valley, Clackamas County, and Washington County, and they're all in competition with us here in Portland for hiring new officers. And so how do we attract more people here? One of the stats, and I don't know how accurate it currently is, that only less than 20% of the Portland police officers actually live and work here in Portland. I would like to find some incentive to get more people that want to live here, work here, and police here to be from here and know their community. And I think that could add a lot of value to our Portland Police Department, along with the Portland Street Response.
That was Ruben Berlin. Now, this is Mariah Hudson.
I have a seventh grader, and for the money that he gets for his allowance, he could buy a couple days worth of fentanyl. And I mention fentanyl, and I mention our drug problem, our hard drug problem here in Portland, because it takes up extraordinary resources with our police force. And it is not simply a downtown problem. It is an everywhere problem. It is getting in the hands of kids. It is a major concern for me as a parent, and one of the reasons I'm running for city council. And I bring this up because when Portland Police stepped back from their narcotics unit, from fully staffing that, and from the street crimes units a couple of years ago, when we failed to fill vacant positions in Portland Police, we really lost that ability to go after and bring to justice drug dealers. And so in terms of our right-sizing our police, I think that's how we need to think about it, is we need to think about North Precinct as, is it right-sized? I worked up in that neighborhood when I was at Portland Community College serving on the Albina Killingsworth Safe Neighborhoods Coalition. That was an effective coalition that reduced gun violence through community policing. It brought together North Precinct, it brought together the college, it brought together business owners and ministers and community members, all to prevent violence there and to reduce drug crime as well. In terms of how we are right-sizing our police, I think we absolutely need the technology. We need the training and the resources for our police to do their jobs well and to focus on that so we can bring down response times. By dealing with drugs, we deal with the main problem that is taxing our police and our systems here. We can do that through addressing overtime and right-sizing both our police and our fire department in that response. Right now, we have $11 million that went this past year to overtime with the Portland Fire Department. What we need to do is have that appropriately staffed, because overtime is the most expensive way to deal with a problem. So I support absolutely having the right size for our police here in North Precinct so that they can reach our communities.
That was Mariah Hudson. Now, this is Chris Olson.
Police don't prevent crime. The other day I had a friend who was walking just by his house and saw a domestic dispute and ended up just seeing this guy yelling at a pregnant woman for multiple minutes, and he ended up standing there and then going ahead and recording that incident. As that incident was happening, as he was recording, the gentleman who was yelling at this pregnant woman started to approach him, started to threaten him. He ended up having to go ahead and spray pepper spray in order to defend himself. And then he ended up was able to go back into his home. His partner called the police, et cetera, et cetera. Moments later, he found out from the Portland police that the gentleman had schizophrenia and he was going through a schizophrenic episode. We don't have the infrastructure in our city to handle these types of situations. And that friend of mine was scared to call the police if this situation was handled wrong by them. He didn't want that to happen. And knowing that we don't have the resources to handle any type of nonviolent situation, he didn't feel like comfortable calling them. So if you go to the PSR study that PSU put out, 97% of PSR calls were originally supposed to be handled by the police. And 68% of those calls were mental health calls, and 60% of those were homeless people. So we have a real issue in response to actually our mental health and our homelessness crisis. This is what's making our community safe, and an armed response is not the response for that.
That was Chris Olson. Now, this is Jonathan Tosini.
To me, the first question is, what are police for? And I think that's really before us as a new city council. And I tie that to the attempted rollback of Measure 110, which I oppose. And I oppose that because it's a response, in a certain way, a human response, to things that we see. We see a crisis. We see something happening in the streets. It's the same thing with homelessness. It's the same thing with people not being able to afford their gas and their groceries. I draw all this back to the question of whether we need policing, how we deal with our infrastructure in the city, to the question, the very fundamental question is, people do not have enough money in the city. People do not earn enough money in their paychecks. And because people are, frankly, always desperate, do not earn enough money, that's where you see people sometimes turn to crime out of desperation. That's the kind of question I think we have to raise at the city council. And so the question of staffing of the police, I don't know whether it should be 3 or 500. I think the fundamental question we have to ask is, what is happening in our city that is causing the things that we find quite oppressive?
That was Jonathan Tosini. You've been listening to edited excerpts from the Portland City Council District 2 Candidate Forum, held March 6th at St. John's Church in Portland, Oregon. In the interest of time and maintaining focus on the questions posed, the candidates' answers have been edited for clarity and brevity. The full, unedited recording of the forum is available on our website at kbu.fm. Let's get back to the forum. This is moderator Seamus Linsky.
This question is, what are your policy plans for guiding the life cycle of temporary housing solutions for unhoused? And then the second part is, do you have a long-term strategy for getting people into permanent housing?
This is Brooklyn Sherman.
Yeah, I care a lot about housing. For the long term, I want to tackle that first, since I care so much about it. Currently,
We only have rent control laws. The rent cap only starts if the place is 15 years or older. And it's only 10% per year. Do you get a 10% wage increase every year? I don't. I don't think anyone in this room does. So we need to first make sure that we work on renters' rights, make sure that we don't have tax hikes on our property value so we can actually continue to be members of this community. And for the temporary housing, it is annoying how the current city council seems to be relocating things to our neighborhood and having foreign interest groups from California and other places run a lot of this stuff from afar. And we need to address having this stuff run locally and making sure that it's more evenly distributed. Because the current city council, you'll never hear them be like, man, we should build a Safe Rest Village in the Southwest Hills. Let's build one in the bougie part of town. You'll never hear that. And we need to make sure the new city council addresses the housing crisis, but not in a way where it's pinning the unhoused and the working class like we are in this neighborhood against each other.
That was Brooklyn Sherman. This is Ruben Berlin.
I want to say yes, that local control is one of the most things that we can't abdicate. I don't think there is a plan what happens if that California company just were to disappear on us, and what would happen to these rest villages. What's the emergency plan to take those back over? So when we talk about temporary housing, I would worry that the safe rest villages become an institution in themselves and aren't really temporary but ongoing forever the plan. When we talk about actual permanent housing, instead of talking about median income and market rate and all those sort of things, we need to talk about the base rate as far as SSI, SSA. How do we keep people in their homes long-term? How do we make sure that those apartments that are going to be long-term affordability? We have PGE coming up with a 70% increase. All these stressors are coming. Unfortunately, I think the recession isn't already upon us, and we just haven't felt it yet. Every day we hear about layoffs, and when that happens to you, it is an immediate depression, but it's not a recession. It's going to be hard to find and replace those jobs. We need to talk about building units where you can permanently affordable for people, that it can be an ongoing managed thing.
That was Ruben Berlin. This is Mariah Hudson.
We know that the number one cause of homelessness is people losing their housing because it is unaffordable or they have come into a life crisis that has pushed them out. The best way to address our homeless crisis, in addition to addressing addiction, is to address more housing. We are at an incredible point here in Portland where we have underinvested for years. Things were going well. It felt good here in Portland. The market was booming, and we underbuilt our housing. But we have an opportunity right now, right here in District 2. I'm excited to be in this district because we have three major housing projects that are going to come online in the next few years. And what we do with those housing projects, and I'm talking about Lloyd, I'm talking about Legacy Emmanuel, and I'm talking about Albina Vision, all three of those are incredible opportunity to build not just market rate, but also affordable and perhaps subsidized housing for folks. By building more housing, that is the way that we're going to long-term address the structural deficit in the number of homes needed. We need about 6,000 per year for the next 20 years, is my understanding, to address the current need and the projected need. Now, in terms of what we're doing for sheltering people, we need to get people indoors. To the extent that we can, we need safe rest villages, we need church basements that are opened up for temporary shelters, we need all the options on the table as soon as we can right now. And we do need to life cycle some of those out. The piece of life cycle is getting people into long-term housing, addressing their comprehensive needs, and that can be addiction and recovery as well. And mental health services. We're going to need to coordinate big time with the county on this to make this happen. But I think looking at those long-term opportunities and investing in those now is where we're really going to have an impact as a city council to structure the future here in Portland.
That was Mariah Hudson. This is Chris Olson.
This has been on my mind a lot recently. A few weeks ago, I discovered that this past year, we've spent over $22 million on sweeps. $22 million to keep people on the streets. They get their stuff taken. it gets put into a storage unit. Usually that stuff is then claimed by other houseless people and then basically getting their stuff stolen. And then they have to start a cycle all over again of trying to build their shelter from the bottom up. And that is insane that we're going to spend that much money to keep people on the streets and then they end up dying like Dino did, if you're familiar with that, just 2 weeks ago. So that the sweeps need to stop and we need to use that money to actually help people and put them in housing. Next thing is that I would like to see, and when it comes to prevention of homelessness, is a renter bill of rights established in Portland. Tacoma just passed one, and there are many features of that I would like to duplicate here. If you increase rent over 5%, relocation assistance would be required from the landlord, and that goes up with each percentage, because much like Brooklyn mentioned, we don't get raises of 10% or 20%. And some people I've known had their rent raised 50%. This has to stop. It's getting astronomical and we need to have better boundaries. Next thing is that we do need to build more affordable housing. And we need to be spending our time and our money focused on building more affordable housing for the people in all of our districts throughout the city.
That was Chris Olson. This is Jonathan Tassini.
So as a member of my neighborhood emergency team, I've been part of many deployments for houseless people, both in the brutal heat of the summer and in the frigid temperatures of the winter. And I've seen that firsthand. I think one of the things we have to remind ourselves is that the crisis of homelessness isn't new. In 2 or 3 years old, this has been going on for decades, and it has to do with the lack of rent control. We can build all the nice, affordable buildings we want. If we don't raise people's wages, they will not be able to afford the rent. The Portland Metro minimum wage is $15.45 an hour. You can do the math. That's a poverty level wage for a family of four, as the federal government thinks of it. Even when people are working at what we think is a high minimum wage compared to the outrageous and immoral federal minimum wage, that is not enough to pay the rent. So I'm proposing a significant minimum wage raise, which obviously is a state issue, and we'll have to really fight for that, and generally to raise people's wages. And the second point is about affordable housing. I am very mindful of trying to build affordable housing, but that has to be paired with raising people's wages so they can pay the rent.
That was Jonathan Tassini. This is John Middleton.